Good morning. In today's Daf and Beitza is Lamed Aleph. We are on the very top of the Mishnah on Lamed Aleph, and we're going to collect wood to make a fire. Okay, on Yantiv, we're going to cook. On Yantiv, we're going to need fuel. A fuel is made in the form of wood. So we're going to go and just simply collect wood in order to make our fire. It's really simple. What will be complicated is where we're going to get the wood from. It's not complicated, meaning we'll get wood from wherever we get wood from. But it will be complicated in terms of wood which is set aside for firewood and wood which is not set aside for firewood. And obviously the issue over here becomes an issue of muksa. There may be other issues as well. I'm going to touch on that in just a moment. But the simplest way to explain it is that there's a muksa consideration. Let us take a look together at the Mishnah on the top of the Amrim Mevi'in Eitzim in Asada. Umin HaMechunas. So where can you go get wood for your fire? So you'll go to the field. Rashi points out the obvious, which is it has to be telushim. The wood has to be already detached from the ground. You can't detach the wood from the ground. Doing so would be an act of kosher. So you can't pull the wood out of the ground. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who allows machshiri ochel nefesh, so presumably he would allow you to detach the wood from the ground, but we don't possibly like Rabbi Yehuda. Right, the Gemara, although Gemara a couple days ago gave us a little bit of ambiguity in terms of whether maybe privately we pass on like Rav Yehuda, but we don't pass on, let's say it nice and clear. We don't pass on like Rav Yehuda. We don't allow machshiri ochel nefesh to be done in Yontif. So you can't be kotzi, you can't pull it out of the ground. So it has to be wood that's already detached from the ground. Fine. So that's not the issue. What is going to be the issue is going to be the issue of muksa. Meaning I didn't set aside this wood for a fire on Yontif. So it's mina mechunas. Rashi says over here im kansome erev yontov. So that means to say that if I he what? Ah, so if he gathered it in before yontov, Rashi writes the galidaita dialayu samech ve'ein amuksa. That is a clear gilui das that that's what he wanted. Aval mufazar muksim, but if they're all scattered around, so they're going to be muksa. Good. Umena karfa fafila mina mufuzar. However, if you go out to the karfaf, now the karfaf is a fenced-in area. It's outdoors. It's still outside, but the area is encircled. It's fenced in. Okay, we discuss karfaf a lot in Masechet Eiruvin, as the karfaf has its own status. It's not in a hukaf ladira. It's not a residential area, despite the fact that it's a rishos yachid. Okay, so but this is not Eiruvin discussion. This is yontiv discussion and muksa discussion. So if the wood is in some sort of penned area, so the Mishnah says, now we could be more mekel. Even if the wood is scattered about, even though I didn't collect the firewood prior to Yontif, then it would be okay. Question, when we say karpuff over here is in fact going to be acceptable, the wood in the karpuff is going to be acceptable, even when scattered, so a little bit of a clarification on that point. What are we talking about when we say karpuff? So we know, again, the very basic definition of a karpuff is that it is an enclosed area. That we know. However, in this context, what do we mean? So ezu karpuff, so it happens to be koshan samach le'ir, div Rabbi Yehuda, machlokis atanayim. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, samach le'ir, it has to be next to the city. So it means to say it has to be immediately outside the city. And Rabbi Yossi, omer koshan nechtas lo beposachas v'afil besoch tom Shabbos. And Rabbi Yossi of the position that it has to be an area where it has a lock and key. It not only is an enclosed area, not only does it have a doorway, but you have the key to that area. So as long as you have the key to that area, according to Rabbi Yossi, so then the karpuff doesn't have to be immediately outside the city. It could even be at a distance outside the city. Now, when we say at a distance, it still is capped. And that, of course, is tchum. We're going to be discussing a lot over the remainder of the Masechta, the idea that tchum not only is an issue on Shabbos, it's an Isser on Shabbos, it's an Isser on Yontif as well. You're not allowed to walk beyond Chum on Shabbos, you're not allowed to walk beyond Chum on Yontif as well. Don't confuse that with carrying. On Yontif, you're allowed to carry, but you're not allowed to go beyond your Chum, both on Shabbos and on Yontif. So the Karpuff can get wood from the Karpuff, even if it's scattered wood in the Karpuff, according to Rav Yossi. Even if it's at a distance means it still has to be within 2,000 amas of the city. It needs to have a key. Okay, in other words, it has to have a locking key. Okay, so we are basically discussing in the Mishnah where to get the wood from in order to make your fuel for the fire. So the obviously easiest point to make is that before Yontif, collect your wood. so that now the wood is no longer mukhsa, the wood is mukhan, it's been now set aside, designated for the usage on Yantiv, and that's going to be the easiest. However, for whatever reason, you didn't set aside your wood, so where can you go to collect wood? So the Mishnah says that you can go to your karpuf in order to get it, and it's just a machlokas tanaim, exactly where the karpuf is situated and whether or not the karpuf needs a lock and key. Okay, in a moment, we're going to try to even further clarify the positions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. As you'll see, it gets a little bit complicated, but that's just, that'll be a sure part of today's daf.
What's the difference between a sod and a karpuf?
I'm sorry, Mitch, just one, just give me 1 second. I'm going to get back to you.
Does the
tchum
act as an
eruv to the city? No, the tchum is totally irrelevant, irrespective to eruv. Tchum just simply means that we are bound, we're circumscribed where we can walk. We can walk a certain distance, and then at that point in time, we've hit the limit. We can't walk a certain distance beyond that. So tchum means that 2,000 amas outside the city limit, I just can't walk anymore. In other words, the Torah prohibits, let's say it clear. The rabbis prohibit walking beyond that point in time. That tchum is just simply an area where I can and cannot walk. Okay, Mitch, go ahead.
So a karpuf and a sada, they're both it's your field and your karpuf.
Not necessarily. The karpuf, yes. The sada, not necessarily. Sada is just simply a field. Mishnah's not clear about ownership in terms of who owns it. Even if it's not yours, but the wood you gathered before Yantiv, so that's fine. In other words, the wood now is mukhan. In other words,
and the karpuf has to be a mukuf?
And the karpuf has to be mukuf. It's an enclosed area by definition. That's the very definition of a karpuf. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mevin it's an element of hamechunasim shebekarpuf. Okay, so the Gemara now quotes a chumra of Shmuel. And that is that even if I want to get the wood from the enclosed area, it has to be wood that was already collected prior to Yantiv. So to which the Gemara says, I don't know, I just read the Mishnah, right? You just read the Mishnah. That's not what the Mishnah says. Okay, so the obvious question is that how does Shmuel arrive at the Chumra when you and I just read the Mishnah? And that's not the conclusion we got from the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Masis and Yechidahi. So the Gemara says, yeah, I also read the Mishnah, but what we're going to do is as follows. We're going to give us more information, new information. And that is that the Mishnah is not the authoritative position on this matter. In fact, the Mishnah is a Das Yachid. It's one person's opinion. Now, I know that's strange, right? It's a Mishnah. But, and the Mishnah, by the way, meaning the first part of the Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah. Okay, good. But new information now is going to be provided to us. And that is the Mishnah is not an authoritative position. It's one Tana's a position. How do I know that? They're telling you, we have a Braisa. I'm Rabbi Shimon, and if the wood was scattered out in the field, that's out of the question, Moksa. No good. Beisham and Beisela both agree. And Allah Mukunasim Shebekarpav Shemevian. And if it is gathered and collected in the Karpav, so then you are allowed to bring that wood in, because that wood is now Mukhan, it's not Moksa. The machlokes between Beisham and Beisela is if it's scattered in the karpuf or if it is collected out in the field. According to Beisham, you're not allowed to bring it. Okay, now, according to Beisela, you're allowed to bring it. Now, that sounds like our Mishnah. Okay, not only does it sound like our Mishnah, that is our Mishnah. So what new information did we just learn? So I ran over the new information, and that is, whose understanding is this? Go back to the beginning of the Braisa. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. This is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's viewpoint of the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, which means to say that our Mishnah now is only represented by one Tana, meaning that there is another anonymous Tana, anonymous, not even mentioned over here in this Braisa, but there's another version, there's another viewpoint, which is that the wood always has to be collected, even in the Karpuf. Good, that's some other Tana's viewpoint, and when Shmuel is giving the Psak, he's issuing the Psak based on the other Tana, which, quite frankly, we didn't see it. But Shmuel has a Masorah that there's another Tana. Amar Rava, continuing in the Gemara, Alei Kanim v'Alei Kfanim Afagav Demechan Filahu Umos V'Kevin De I Madli Ziko Mevajalu Kim Mefuzarim Dami V'Asurim V'I Aznach Mana Me'esma Alai Shaper Dami. Allah offered by Rava on this topic, and that is, let's say I have really light wood, leaves, okay. In other words, it is fuel for the fire, but it's really light, and just the smallest breeze is going to go ahead and scatter it around. So there the halacha is, says Rava, is that even if it's gathered, it's still considered muksa, because the lightest breeze is going to go ahead and scatter it. Okay, remember back in the Northeast, we used to rake leaves. Okay, remember the good old days? Yeah. So good. So the so then the smallest windows are just going to scatter it around. So here as well. So, and if I put some sort of paperweight on it, I know that's funny, but if I not only gather it, but I put something, some weight on top of it, under those circumstances, Shapri Dami, then it would be fine. It would no longer be considered Moksa. Okay. Now, before we get to the complication, we're about to hit a somewhat bumpy part of the Gemara for today's daf. So the halacha is, has been actually really clear in that in order for wood to be used for fuel on Yantiv, so it has to be Mukhan. You just simply have to set it aside. Now, right, the so far, we saw a mission that says that if you are in the field, so that wood had to have been collected before Yantiv. In the Karpuf, it doesn't have to be collected, although, as we got through the Gemara, the conclusion of the Gemara is that even in the Karpuf, it still has to be collected. That is Shmuel's Chumra over that of what we learned in the Mishnah. Now, as you've probably been now gathering for the last 10 minutes as we started the daf today, so what's the issue? The issue is seemingly is Muksa. That seemingly is the issue. There could be another issue, which the Gemara over here does not bring up, but Tosos does. Take a look at the top Tosos over here. Min a karpa ve'afilu min a mefuzar, tema. So, ha-have me'amer. Okay, so it's a malacha that is not spoken about much in Masechta Shabbos, nor is it spoken about much here in Yantiv. But one of the 39 malachas of Shabbos is what's called ma'amer. Ma'amer means to gather, which means as follows. On Shabbos, one of the 39 malachas are that once you have the fruit in the field, the wheat in the field, and you harvest it, meaning cutting it, that's kotzer, and then collecting it together in a pile, that is a malacha. One of the 39, which means to say that once I take the wheat or whatever produce, post-harvesting, gather into a pile, so that is what's called ma'amer, that's an issur d'oraisa. It's a malacha. It's a malacha on Shabbos, and presumably it's also malacha on Yantiv. And I know we're talking here about ochel nefesh, but as we've discussed already numerous times throughout our Masechta, not every malacha is going to be mutter because of ochel nefesh. In fact, the vast majority of malachas are not mutter because of ochel nefesh. It's only the final malachas of preparation, of shechita and bishul, havara. So those malachas are mutter, but ma'amer would not be mutter. So what are we talking about over here? The wheat has been scattered throughout the karpuf, and I'm collecting it into a pile. So that would be ma'amer. So how is that working? So Tosus over here writes very succinctly, V'yishlamar, de'lo shayach imur, ela b'makam shekadelim sham, k'demuchach b'perek la'gado. So ma'amer is only b'makam gidulo. Okay, that's the Gemara in Shabbos. Tosus over here invokes that principle in order to explain why our Gemara doesn't talk about ma'amer. Ma'amer is only in the place where it grows. In other words, so when you harvest, so you're cutting the wheat down. Now, when you take all that wheat after you cut it, but in other words, in the makam gidulo, in the place that it was grown, so under those circumstances, so now you're violating the malacha. Tosa's assumption over here is that the wood that's scattered, so that means that wasn't where it grew, meaning the wood wasn't harvested. In other words, the wood fell, and the wind blew it around. Scattered over here just simply means that there's no organization. But that's not makam gidulo, and that's why it's not a violation of ma'amer. That's Tosa's very succinct way of explaining that there could be another issue over here where the Gemara doesn't bring it up. And Tosus explains why the Gemara didn't bring it up. Okay, a bit of a stalling tactic. Yes.
So is the din of muksa where I had set aside for myself, but let's say stam, you don't have any das, but you're going to need it.
Yeah.
Like pots and pans, you know you're going to need it, but you don't specifically set it aside.
Right.
Every shot.
Correct. Pots and pans are in your house and they're totally under your ownership. Trees are out in the forest, or you know, out and about.
You're gonna need firewood.
Agreed. Totally agreed. But it's, in other words, right. So if you the pots and pans were to say the very least are mechunas. There's something that you gathered. In other words, I know you didn't actively gather it, but in other words, in terms of a status, you know, they're much easier to look at mechunas when it comes to wood that you're getting out in the field. So you need to do something in order to clearly indicate that that's the one that you want. Okay, but Mitch, I hear you. I hear you, and I certainly understand your point. But the Gemara's assumption is that wood, being that you're getting it from nature, you need to do something to clearly indicate that this is mukhan and not muksa. Okay, stalling tactics for the upcoming Gemara. The upcoming Gemara is going to get a little bit choppy. It's going to get a little bit tricky, but it's a short piece, and that is as follows. We now looked at our Mishnah, and we know that by the Karpuf, so you could be more makel, at least according to our Mishnah. I know the Gemara's conclusion is not that way, but according to the Mishnah, you could be more makel by Karpuf. You can take wood from the Karpuf even if it is Mufuzar. Now, where's that Karpuf located, and is the Karpuf under lock and key? So, it's a machlokas in the Mishnah. There's the Shita Rabbi Yehuda and there's the Shita Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that has to be proximate to the city. That part we got pretty clear. Rabbi Yossi mentioned something about the Karpov being under lock and key. What are the significant factors for Rabbi Yehuda? What are the significant factors for Rabbi Yossi? So we kind of know, but the Gemara says, but there's still room to discuss. And that room in which we're going to discuss is what we're going to do right now. Ezu Karpov v'chule ibaylu. Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Halfway down in the Amud. So the Gemara says, I got the following question. Hechi kamer kosher samach leir. So, v'hudi isle posacha. So now, let us suggest the following pshat within the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is the first opinion of the Mishnah. Let's say that he requires two things. Meaning, again, you read the Mishnah, you know he's talking about proximity being an issue. Maybe, this is what the Gemara is entertaining now, that there really are two issues for Rabbi Yehuda. In that he needs it to be both proximate, and also the Karpov B have to be under lock and key. And Rav Yossi now is coming to be Mekel, and he says, no, lock and key is the only significant factor, meaning proximity is not a factor. Okay, that's possibility number one. Okay, possibility number two. So, and maybe the other alternative, which, frankly, it's just an easier way to read the Mishnah, is that they're just not talking to each other. Meaning that for Rabbi Yehuda, the issue is proximity, and that's the only issue. Meaning lock and key is not a factor at all for Rabbi Yehuda. And for Rabbi Yossi, proximity is not an issue at all. And the only issue is going to be an issue of being under lock and key. Okay, maybe that's the right way to understand the Mishnah. Okay, so Tashma. So the Gemara says, good. So now we have offered two possible suggestions of how to understand Rav Yehuda, what's the response of Rav Yossi, and basically what are the critical factors in terms of the allowances given to the Karpov. Gemara says, Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, well, what we're going to do now is we're going to go back to our Mishnah, critical reading of the Mishnah, and we're going to get at it. Now, what is going to be complicated over here, right, so far it's been pretty straightforward, is that what the Gemara is going to do is the Gemara is going to go off the board. Right? It's one of those funny moments in the Gemara, where the Gemara says, here, let me provide for you two options, and the Gemara says, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go with option C, none of the above. Okay, so, and the Gemara is, with the critical reading of the Mishnah, will tell us that really, even within the two possibilities, we didn't get it right. And that is, Rabbi Yossi, Amar Kosha Nichnasim Lo Beposachas, V'afilu Besochtum Shabbos. So Rabbi Yossi will tell you that if the Karpov is under lock and key, so it doesn't have to be proximate. But if it's proximate, so that doesn't have to be under lock and key. Meaning what Rabbi Yossi is saying is that I am Mako. I'm going to allow the Karpov its leniencies if I have either or. If I have proximity, it's close to the city, or if it's far away from the city, but it's under lock and key. So under either of those circumstances, I'm going to give the kula of it being a karpuff, where if the wood is there, and even if it's scattered around, you can go ahead and you can take from that wood. That is the Gemara's understanding of Rav Yossi. Now, Rav Yossi Amar Kosh Minchansom Baposachas, Rav Philip Sotchum Shabbos Shmamina, Rav Yossi talked to Lakula Kamar, Shmamina. And now, if that is in fact Rav Yossi's position, so what is Rav Yehuda's position? So Rashi points out over here, you can see Rashi at length. I'm giving the short version of this whole discussion. So as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, so Rav Yehuda only takes one thing into consideration, and that's going to be Samach, meaning that proximity. Meaning that according to Rav Yehuda, lock and key is not going to play a factor at all in the discussion. And and by virtue of the fact that how did the Gemara arrive at this conclusion? So it's the language of Rav Yossi. And again, Rashi over here goes through this in much greater detail than I'm going through now, but still, just in terms of the short version of this discussion, look back at the Mishnah. Rav Yossi Omer Kol Shenichnasim Lo Beposachas Ve'afilu B'toch Tchum Shabbos. Meaning, if Rav Yossi's only critical factor is going to be lock and key, so then what the Mishnah should have said for Rav Yossi is Kol Shenichnasim Lo Beposachas. Period. Period. Meaning those extra words in the Mishnah, Ve'afilu B'soch Tchum Shabbos, even if it's within Tchum Shabbos. So meaning that it's not close to the city. It's at the edge of where you can walk. So that would have become totally unnecessary if Rav Yossi was only focusing on the Karpov being under lock and key. By virtue of the fact that he says v'afilu b'soch tum Shabbos, that means as follows. This is the Gemara's understanding of Rav Yossi. Is that if it's under lock and key, and it's not proximate, then it's fine. But if it's proximate, then you don't even need to be under lock and key. That's the diuk the Gemara makes within the Shita of Rav Yossi. And now that means to say that for Rav Yossi, as long as I have one of those two factors, it would be fine. Now, according to Rav Yehuda's point of disagreement is that he just does not view lock and key being a critical factor at all. The critical factor is only going to be proximity. And then on this, the Gemara concludes, I'm Rav Salah, I'm Rav Yirmiyah, halacha k'Rav Yossi l'akel. And oh, by the way, the halacha falls like Rav Yossi, which means that if the karpov is either proximate or it's under lock and key, meaning, but it's not right next to the city, under each of those circumstances, it will enjoy the status of being a karpov vis-a-vis this particular halacha, and you would be allowed to take wood from that, even though you didn't set aside the wood going into Yontif. Okay. No. It has to be b'soch tum. It has to be b'soch tum. Okay. Let's continue. We're on the Mishnah on Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, halfway down, not halfway, most of the way down. It's the last Mishnah on the Amud, Avakin Eitzim, Lamed Akaris, V'Lamed Akaris, and Ishbara B'Yontif. So the Mishnah opens up with, you can't chop up wood. Again, today's daf is dedicated for fuel. Okay. We need fuel for the fire. We're going to make a fire. We need fuel for the fire. So first, where are we collecting the wood from? That was the Amud Aleph of today's daf. And the Amud Beis of today's daf, or I should say part one of the Amud Beis, part one of Amud Beis is, now I got these big chunks of wood. We got to chop the wood up for fuel. So the Mishnah says that Eim Avakin, Eitzim, you can't cut up wood. Not from the Karos, not from the Karosh and Ishbar B'yantav, not when it broke on Yantav. And Ein Mevakin lo b'kardim, v'lo b'mager, v'lo b'magal, ela b'kupats. And you can't use these big instruments. I'll give these instruments names, not because I know, but basically these are all professional instruments. And Rashi says that. So, and Tosus on the Amud Beis today says, look, Tosus writes this. Look, we don't know what these, you know, we don't really know the precise definition of these instruments. But here's what we know. Anything which is like a axe-like item, which is, you know, which is what the professionals use for cutting wood, that you can't use on Yontif. Oh, but you can use a kupitz, you can use some sort of knife. Okay, it's a big knife, obviously. We're talking about cutting wood. But in other words, a kupitz you're allowed to use, but any of the big industrial instruments you're not allowed to use. Now, that mission was confusing, was it not? Meaning the mission opened up with, you can't cut wood. And then the mission says, oh, but if you use a kupitz, then it would be okay. So the Hamad Resha, and that's exactly where the Gemara takes us through what seems to be a confusing point of the Mishnah. Hamad Resha Imavakin Klal. So the Mishnah opened up with you're not allowed to cut wood at all. And if we would stop there in the Mishnah, so you're not allowed to cut wood at all. If that's what the Mishnah would have just said and stopped there, so then Rashi explains over here on the top of the Amud. So then we would have thought, you know what the issue becomes? The issue becomes Tircha, meaning the wood is not Muktzah, obviously. If we're chopping up this wood for fuel for the fire, it means that we set aside this wood for the fire. So it's not muksa. So the issue must be it's tircha. In other words, what the chachamim did not want us to do on yantif is overexert ourselves. So okay, fine. So and what should you have done? You should have cut the wood up before yantif. Okay, that's if the mishnah would have stopped there. But the mishnah didn't stop there. The mishnah went on to say, oh, you know, but if you use a non-professional instrument, a regular knife, so then you're allowed to cut the wood. So it's not tircha. So imagine now you're not using an axe, you're using a low grade, right? It's a cutting instrument in order to cut the wood. Obviously, tircha is not the issue over here. All right, so what is the issue? So you probably guessed it correctly. The issue is muksa. Okay, the issue is muksa. So the Gemara says, "V'amar reisha mevakin klal, so I'm reviewing a mishmo chasur mechzer v'achi katani." So the Gemara over here now, in order to say a good psha in the Mishnah, we have to add a little bit more to the Mishnah. We're going to do that right now. So if I have wood that, let's say, we put aside for construction, right? It's lumber that I piled up nice and neat and organized for building. Or it's wood that broke off the tree on Yontif. Oh, so they're muksa issues. So under those circumstances, so now you can't cut the wood because that wood is muksa. In the first case where it was piled up for construction, so obviously it was set aside for construction, not for fuel, not for firewood. In the second example, it fell off the tree on Yontif. That's called nolad. That's muksa. Okay. And aval mevakim in a karish and ishbar mayor of Yontif. However, if the wood fell off the tree before Yontif and it's no longer an issue of muksa, and let's assume that you set it aside going into Yontif under those circumstances, it would be fine. And on top of that also, what are you going to use to cut it up? Meaning for the non-muksa wood. So what you use to cut it up is a kupitz, meaning a non-professional instrument. Tanya mihachi, this pshat that we just offered in the Mishnah, we have a brisa corroborating this pshat. Okay, great. The brisa says it super clear. The brisa says the issue is that these pieces of wood that were either set aside for construction or fell off the tree on yantiv, so enam and amuchan. It's the opposite of muchan is muksa. Okay, velopakardam. You are not allowed to use axes. I'm Rav Chinna bar Shamayim Mishmei Darav Loshanu Ela Benikeva Shalom. Shalom, ava bezachr shalom mutter. So the Gemara says, now it depends on which side of the axe we're talking about, whether we're talking about the zachr or nekeva. Okay? In terms of looking at the axe, so there's a thick side, a thin side. The thick side of the axe is called the nekeva. Okay? A woman's wider at the hips. That's why probably it's called the nekeva. And the thinner side is called the zachr. Okay, fine, whatever. So so you can use the thin side, not the thick side. In other words, the professionals use the thick side. Again, I'm not really sure what kind of instrument we're talking about. It's great to visualize. Great. It's important to visualize, but I don't really know what we're looking at over here. It doesn't matter. The point is that whatever the professionals use, that's what we can't use on Yantif. They use the thicker side, so therefore we can't. We can only use the thin side. So Pshita. So Bekupitz Tanan, the Gemara says, now, truth of the matter is, I knew that already from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you could use a kupatz, a non-professional instrument. So Mao Detema Hanimila Kufatz Luchudea Valkardom, Vekufatz Ema Migo Da Haigis Aser, Haigis Anami Aser, Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says, well, if all I had was the Mishnah, here's what I would have said. If we're talking about a knife, a non-professional knife, that's fine. But if you're talking about some sort of hatchet that's got two sides to it, a mutter side and an usser side, so you can easily have imagined the rabbis would have stepped in and said, wait a second, it's double-sided, one side is mutter and the other side is aser. The rabbi said, you know what, I got a great idea, don't use it. just don't use it. Meaning because, you know, as much as you'll use the right side, you could also use the wrong side, and that would have been room for a gzera, that's the havamina, kamash malan, that's the chiddush. Ega demastin la seifa. Some say that it's going on the seifa ala bekupitz. Amar Rav Chinna bar Shamayim Mishmei Derav Loshana ala bezachrus. So the Gemara says over here, that's only talking about the zachris. It's only talking about the male side. You can't use that, but the female side, I'm sorry, you could use the male side, not the female side. Pshita, v'lo b'kardom tanan. That's exactly what we learned in our Mishnah. Ma'u detema animil kardom. Aval kupitz v'kardom. Eim amigu de ha'gis ha'shari, ha'gis ha'shari, kamash malan. In the second version, so what was a havamina now is a maskana. In the second version, if I have a double-sided hatchet where it has the mutter side and usser side, the thin mutter side, the thick usser side. So here in the second version, so once it's double-sided and once one of those sides is usser, so you can't use either one of them. Okay, that's the Chachamim goes there. That's the second version of the discussion. Okay, so where are we right now? So in today's daf, we so far collected the wood for fuel. We're chopping up the wood into pieces, into manageable pieces. That's so far what we've been navigating over here in today's daf. And now,
if the problem is a klishim lachol isser, so then it should be mutter tzara kufo, which is cutting the wood, which is making him, which is okay. And if it's a nusim akus kasaro kis, then you shouldn't be able to use it at all, even if using the opposite side. So what's the Gemara's as far as why one side is mutter, one side is aser?
So the svara would be that once you're using professional grade. It's either you can call it muksa or probably maybe the other term is uvda dechol. It's like a weekday activity. If you're using professional grade, in other words, this is how they do it during the week, and the chachamim do not want yotif to look like a weekday. I don't have really good support for what I just offered as a pshat in the Gemara. Rashi does not use the words uvda dechol. Okay. I do hear you. Okay. Okay. You like my pshat. Okay. Good. I appreciate it. Okay. Rashi. If I could just use Rashi's language over here, which doesn't really match what I'm saying, right? Rashi dibra amaskal lo shanu ola b'nekev shalom B'rosh ha-rachav she-kotzen bo ha-etz l'rachvo, didami le-melechus uman. Maybe Rashi means by that uvda the chol. It could be. Okay, good. I would suggest that. He doesn't use the words uvda the chol. Just being intellectually honest. Okay, next. We are on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, and we're in the Mishnah halfway down. So Baishu Malei Peros, so the house is filled with fruit. The problem is that right now the house is closed off. Okay, boarded. Totally boarded shut. Lock key. No one's got the key. Okay, in other words, there's no way to get into the house. Going into Yontif. So the fruit inside is Muksa. That's going to be our discussion. Really interesting discussion. Meaning, so right now, I have no way of accessing the fruit. The fruit, of course, is fine. It just happens to be that there's no way of accessing it other than breaking down the door. Now, breaking down the door would be an act of destruction. What's called stira. That in of itself is a malacha. So the question now becomes the following. Is something inherently not Muksa, but in order for me to gain access to it, I have to do some sort of violation of Shabbos or Yontov. So then, does the contents therein become muktzah? That's the question. The Gemara, the Mishnah opens up with the following. Ba'ishu malei peres v'nif chas. Noto mi makam hapchas. So according to the Tanakhama, if let's say on Yontov, so the walls get breached. You didn't do it. Whatever creative story you want to get to, the walls got breached. So the Mishnah says that under those circumstances, you can access the fruit on Yontif. And what we're learning now together is the following. The fruit do not gain a muksa status just because I can't access them. Okay. In fact, look at Rashi over here. Rashi in the Mishnah. Noto mi makam apchas, velo amrina muksa machmas isrhein, de ein yachol, okay, so here's what we're not saying. We're not saying the fruit becomes muksa. But Rashi over here makes a really important point. Now Rashi has the benefit of having already gone through the Gemara, not just gone through the Gemara, mastered the Gemara. But Rashi over here with the vantage point, with the advantage of knowing the Gemara, Rashi says, because breaking the walls, if you were to do that, would not have been a Nisa D'Oraisa, right? So only would have been Nisa D'Rabbanan. Now, why? So stay tuned. Meaning, I know Rashi said it, but when we get to the Gemara, I'm gonna explain it better. It's only Nisa D'Rabbanan. So what Rashi now is teaching us is the following, is that if the only thing preventing me from getting to it is an Nisa D'Rabbanan, that doesn't mean, just to be as clear as possible, it doesn't mean that I'm allowed to violate the Nisa D'Rabbanan. Of course you're not. But if the only thing preventing me access is an Nisa D'Rabbanan, the contents do not become muksa. And Isser Derabanan will not give fruit the status of muksa. And Rashi says, now how do I know that? Rashi says, I'll tell you how I know that. Kedamar gabi tevel bishul pirkin. Because in a couple days from now, here's what we're going to learn together. You have tevel, non-tithed produce. So shehu muchan eitz o shabashim avar v'tikna mesukan. Now are you allowed to take off trumas and maisos on Shabbos and Yontov? The answer is no. Right, we've said that many different ways over the course of our Masechta. You're not allowed to be mafresh shumas or maisos, but that's an issa d'rabbanan. It's not an issa d'raisa. Are the tevel now muksa on Shabbos and Yontif? And the answer is no, because the only thing preventing me access to it is an issa d'rabbanan. And if all that's preventing me access to something is an issa d'rabbanan, it does not gain the status of muksa. Okay, really, it's an interesting idea. It's a mouthful, meaning it really requires a lot of thought why that should be.
Good.
You're articulating the question well, right? If it's clear now in this Rashi that if it's an Issa D'Oraisa, that would prevent me to an item, the item now is Muksa. But if it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan, the item is not Muksa, right? Ben articulates the question. I'm just going to reiterate the question. I don't have a great answer. Meaning once there is a prohibition to gain access to that item, what difference would it make whether the Issa is a D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan? I understand by D'Rabbanan we're Mako, but like, for example, by Suffolk D'Rabbanan we're Mako. But over here, if I can't gain access to the item, and the whole idea behind muksa is that I did not think that we're going to be using that item, and Issa D'Rabbanan, we take our Issa D'Rabbanan seriously, right? It's just as prohibited as an Issa D'Oraisa. Okay, there are kulas, but still, it's an Issa. So if it's an Issa that's preventing me to get to an item, so why should it be that the item now is not muksa? Okay.
But isn't moksha itself inherently conscious of the Rabbana itself?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Moksha is a din de Rabbana.
And gaining access to the item is not so simple.
So we're going to explain why. We're going to explain why. That Rashi knew the Gemara, and we're going to know the Gemara in just a moment. But yes, it's not a Issa D'Oraisa Soser. Okay. Now, Reb Meir in the Mishnah, Reb Meir Omer, Af Poches Lechatzchila Venotel. Reb Meir says, look, you want to get to the fruit? I got this great idea. Break the door down. Get to the fruit and everything is resolved. Now, the Gemara, in other words, Reb Meir allows for a really strong reaction, right? Right? What? Okay, good. Right? The emojis would work out perfectly over here. In other words, you read Reb Meir, and then all of a sudden, like, the reaction is like that surprised look of like, what is he talking about? You're allowed to break a door down? You're allowed to break a wall down? Like, what's going on over here? Am I vaka saser oala? Okay, so breaking the door, breaking the wall would be stira. And like, what's going on over here? Okay, within the Tanakhama, we now have a much more nuanced version of the Tanakhama. Still, we don't fully understand the Tanakhama, or I'll say it clear. I don't understand the Tanakhama fully, but still. But within Shitas Reb Meir, like, what is he talking about? Breaking the wall down? So Amai V'Aka Sasa Ola. So Amar Reb Nechumi Bar Ada Amar Shmuel Be'Avir De'Livni. So the Gemara says as follows. It's not, the wall is not perfectly constructed. Meaning, if we're talking about bricks where it was plastered and cemented, one brick next to another, so breaking the wall would be an act of stira midoraisa. Okay, there is nothing to discuss under those circumstances. What our Mishnah here is describing, says the Gemara, says Rav Nechumi, is that the bricks were just simply positioned one on top of another. Okay, and they weren't cemented together. And so therefore it is not a binyan kavua. It's only a binyan arai. It's a temporary structure at this point in time. Breaking a temporary structure is an issur d'rabbanan, not an issur d'oraisa.
Why wouldn't we do
uvda d'chol? Okay, it could, right. Uvda d'chol is really hard to define. And so when the Gemara doesn't say it, so we don't have to say it.
Well,
so
why can't you do it then?
Okay, so Bavir d'livni, so the So Ini, so the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, are you right about that? Vahama Rav Nachman, Hainu Livni Diyasami Binyana Charlotte Tatuluna Bishabasaho Vechazal Mizga Alayhu. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. If I do have leftover bricks after having built a building, and so those leftover bricks, so they make for good chairs. That's kind of hard to imagine, but maybe you're taking a couple of bricks and putting them together, stacking them together, whatever. The point is that leftover bricks are not muksa because you could use them for sitting on. However, sharginu vada aksainu. But once you stack them in a row, so now they're muksa. And basically what the Gemara is wondering now is the following. Okay, for Rebbe Meir. So you tell me that the bricks are not cemented. So therefore it's not stira d'oraisa. At worst, it's stira midrabanan. Okay, but when all said and done, it's muksa. The bricks that are piled up so that they are going to be basically forming a building. In the very least, they're muksa. You can move those bricks. Okay, so let's take stira out of the discussion, even though we haven't totally removed it from the discussion. But in the very least, they're muksa. So I'm Rabbi Zera, b'yontav amra v'lo b'shabbos. So Rabbi Zera says, I know they're muksa, but on yontav you're allowed to move them. Now, what is Rabbi Zera saying? So now, here's what he's not saying. It's not that we're just dismissing muksa altogether on yontav, because we will then have lost a good percentage of our masechta. Meaning, if you've been following since the first day of the Masechta, so you know Muksa is an issue on Yantav, right? In fact, I'll take you all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta, where there the Gemara made the point that, you know, Muksa can even be more of an issue on Yantav than it is on Shabbos. Since there's so many leniencies on Shabbos, so in order to counterbalance Yantav, so the Chachamim were more machmir as it related to Muksa. Okay. We made such a comment like that in the beginning of the Masechta. So over here, he is not dismissing Muksa altogether. Here's what he is saying, and this is Tosus's pshat within Rebbe Zera. And that is that even though muksa is a thing, both on Shabbos and on Yantiv, but for ochal nefesh, in other words, for the direct access of food, so then we can go ahead and we can overlook muksa. Look at the bomb Tosus over here. Amr Rebbe Zera b'yantiv amru perish de'etira muksa mishum ochal nefesh. Ochal nefesh is going to allow for the violation of a limited number of malachos, and, right, and by the way, this is not the first time we're making this point in this masechta. Ochel Nefesh is also going to allow for the movement of Muksa. Meaning, but it has to be direct. In other words, so that we are moving an item so that we can directly access the food. Avalo b'Shabbos mikan yeshray l'ritzbasha shapir shleil de tilto muksa hitir b'yantu mishum ochel nefesh. So Tosfos says, I'm going to hearken back to a point that we made earlier in our Masechta, which is that for ochel nefesh you're allowed to move muksa. Okay, so and that's his understanding of Rabbi Zera. So b'yantav amra avalo b'Shabbos. Tanya nami hachi. The Gemara quotes a brisa supporting this as well, and that is Rabbi Meir Omer. Af poches lechatchila v'notav b'yantav amru avalo b'Shabbos. Yeah. So what you could do is that you can take down the bricks in order to gain access to the food, but only on yantav, not on Shabbos. So in other words, this is a yantav allowance, not a Shabbos allowance. Okay. So now. This part does get now a little bit tricky. So that means to say that according to Reb Meir, you are in fact allowed to move the bricks because even though the bricks are muksa, but for ochel nefesh purposes, and yantiv, you're allowed to do so. Now, go back to the Tanakama of the Mishnah. So we have to stay with the same mukimta, meaning that the wall over here is not plastered, it's not cemented. So according to the Tanakama, now what? So according to the Tanakama, there really could be two points that he's arguing on. Point number one that he could be arguing on is the muksa issue, meaning that for Rebbe Meir, muksa can be moved for ochel nefesh. And maybe the Tanakhama says, no, muksa cannot be moved for ochel nefesh. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that it could be an issue of stiras ohel. Even though the bricks are not cemented one to another, and so it's not stira midaraisa, but it could be that it's still soser midarabanan. And it could be that the Chachamim would say that on Yontif, Stira Durabanan is not going to override accessing the food. It's not going to give the food a muksa status, but nevertheless, you cannot violate the Isser of Stira, even though it is only Stira's Arai. The Binyan is a Binyan Arai, not a Binyan Keva.
If there's no bonnet behind it, why would the Stira be an issue?
If there's no
bonnet. Stira only goes
with bonnet. No, but in other words, yeah, I understand that.
If you're demolishing in order to build, that's...
So let's assume that you're demolishing in order to build.
You're just planning just like the food. You don't need to just...
Okay, it could be. It could be. It's possible what you're saying, but the Gemara doesn't speak much about this, and so it really... What we still need to do, and the Gemara doesn't discuss it, is that we still need to come up with a better understanding of what then is the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rebbe Meir. Okay, we'll talk about the cellar doors tomorrow, the chosamos, and the locks on the cellar doors. We'll leave that discussion off for tomorrow. Let's quickly recap our daf today. Opening up with today's daf. So where am I collecting the wood from in order for fuel for the fire? So the best thing to do is to collect the wood before Yantiv. Now the wood is mucha, not muksa. But what if I have, let's say, an enclosed area, a karpuf? So can I collect from that wood? The Mishnah says yes. But a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, under what circumstances? When all said and done, after a, not lengthy, but after a little bit of a discussion, the Gemara did two things. Number one, say Pshat and Rabbi Yossi, and also Paskin like Rabbi Yossi. Pshat and Rabbi Yossi is that he allows for two kulas. One is that if the karpov is proximate to the city, even though it's not under lock and key, so that's good. Meaning, I can now go anywhere within the karpov, collect any wood from within the karpov. That is one. Second kula of Rabbi Yossi, even if the karpov is not immediately next to the city, but it's within walking distance, meaning it's within Tchum Shabbos, and Tchum Yantav, and it's under lock and key, so that too allows me to go into the karpov and collect the wood from wherever I want. Now, all this, by the way, I say all this as being the correct pshat of Rabbi Yossi, just cover myself for today. That's everything I said is Rashi's understanding of the Gemara, right? I presented the Gemara today, Aliba de Rashi, which is generally, that's my default. I'm saying this parenthetically. It happens to be that if you read the Rambam, that's not the conclusion you get in terms of his understanding of the Gemara. But close parentheses, we're not doing the Rambam today. This is a daf. So I'll give the straightforward presentation. All this, however, with the backdrop of Shmuel thinks that our Mishnah is a Das Yachid, and it doesn't represent the majority position. And according to Shmuel, even in a Karpov, the wood has to have been collected prior to Yantiv. Okay, good. And then cutting the wood up. That was our second topic of discussion today. So the Mishnah says is that as long as the wood is not Muksa, i.e., the wood was collected, and the wood did not fall off the tree on Yontif itself, or the wood wasn't put together for construction purposes. It wasn't piled for construction purposes. As long as it's not muksa, so then you can cut up the wood on Yontif. You cannot use professional grade instruments to cut the wood up. So you can't use hatchets and axes. You can only use a knife. Okay, and then a discussion in the Gemara: what if it's double-sided blade? One is mutter, one's aser. What do we say under those circumstances? Two versions of the Gemara. And finally, last thing we covered today was the house, which was, there's fruit inside the house, but for whatever reason, there's no way of opening the door in the house. The house is locked, and the only way we're going to get in is to break it down. So the Tanakhama says, well, you can't break it down, but the fruit inside is not muksa. And if access for whatever was allowed on Yontif, well, right, so somebody is right, the car ran into the house. Such a silly scenario. Car ran into the house on Yontif, and now you can access the fruit, so the fruit is not muksa. Right? That's the Tanakhama. And Reb Meir says you can actually break down the walls. So Gemara, aghast at the suggestion of Reb Meir, what are you saying? You're breaking the walls down? That's stira? Gemara says no. He's talking about where the wall was not cemented, and so therefore it's only a din derabanan, and therefore you're allowed to break it down. The wall is muksa, the bricks are muksa. So the Gemara says, yeah, but muksa, you're allowed to move for ochel nefesh. That's that's the Gemara and Tosus's understanding of Rameir's conclusion. On what point exactly is the Tanakhama arguing? That's where I myself am not perfectly sure. Anyway, Adkan.